Welcome to Hallel Fellowship, found on the internet at hallel.info. That's hallel.info. We hope you are encouraged by the following recorded Bible study to look deeper into every word that proceeds from the mouth of God and how they were lived out in the life of Yeshua HaMashiach, often called Jesus the Christ.
Well, good afternoon. We're getting started with our discussion here. We're going to be going through a passage, the Parashat Ekev or Ikev, depending on the pronunciation of it, going from Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 12 through chapter 11, verse 25. So as we go through here, we're going through a section that's looking at an elaboration on the Ten Commandments, the Ten Statements. And this is a section that's primarily focusing on the First Commandment. So kind of keep that in the back of your mind as we're going through all of this stuff and ask yourself the question, how does this relate to the First Commandment? So think about that as we roll through this. So we're starting with verse 12 of chapter 7. Then it came about, because you listened to these judgments and keep and do them, that the Lord your God will keep with you his covenant and his loving kindness, which he swore to your forefathers. He will love you and bless you and multiply you. He will also bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your ground, your grain and your new wine and your oil, the increase of your herd and the young of your flock, in the land which he swore to your fathers to give you. You shall be blessed above all peoples. There will be no male or female barren among you and among your cattle. The Lord will remove from you all sickness, and he will not put on you any of the harmful diseases of Mitzrayim, which you have known, but he will lay them on all who hate you. You will consume all the peoples whom the Lord your God will deliver to you. Your eye shall not pity them, nor shall you serve their gods, for that would be a snare to you. If you should say in your heart, these nations are greater than I, how can I dispossess them? You shall not be afraid of them. You shall well remember that the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all Mitzrayim, the great trials which your eyes saw, and the signs and the wonders, and the mighty hand and the outstretched arm by which the Lord your God brought you out. So shall the Lord your God do to all the peoples of whom you are afraid. Moreover, the Lord your God will send the hornet against them until those who are left and hide themselves from you perish. You shall not dread them, for the Lord your God is in your midst, a great and awesome God. The Lord your God will clear away these nations before you little by little, and you will not be able to put an end to them quickly, for the wild beasts would grow too numerous for you. But the Lord your God will deliver them before you, and will throw them into great confusion until they are destroyed. He will deliver their kings into your hand, so that you will make their name perish from under heaven. No man will be able to stand before you until you have destroyed them. The graven images of their gods you are to burn with fire. You shall not covet the silver or gold that is on them, nor take it for yourselves, for you will be snared by it, for it is an abomination to the Lord your God. You shall not bring an abomination into your house, and like it come under the ban. You shall utterly detest it, and you shall utterly abhor it, for it is something banned. Chapter 8. All the commandments that I am commanding you today, you shall be careful to do, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord swore to give to your fathers. You shall remember all the way which the Lord your God has led you in the wilderness these 40 years, that he might humble you, testing you, to know what is in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. He humbled you and let you be hungry, and fed you with manna that you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you understand that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord. Your clothing did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. Thus, you are to know in your heart the Lord your God was disciplining you just as a man disciplines his son. Therefore, you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs, flowing forth in valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley and vine and figs and pomegranates, and a land of olives, olive oil and honey, a land where you will eat food without scarcity, in which you will not lack anything, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills you can dig copper. When you have eaten and are satisfied, you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes, which I am commanding you today. Otherwise, when you have eaten and are satisfied and have built good houses and lived in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and gold multiply, and all that you have multiplies, then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out from the land of Mitzrayim and out of the land of the house of slavery. He led you through a great and terrible wilderness with its fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty ground where there was no water. He brought water for you out of the rock of flint. In the wilderness he fed you manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do good for you in the end. Otherwise you might say in your heart, my power and the strength of my hand made me this wealth. But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who has given you power to make wealth, and that he might confirm his covenant which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. It shall come about, if you ever forget the Lord your God and go after other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you today that you will surely perish. Like the nations that the Lord makes to perish before you, so you shall perish, because you do not listen to the voice of the Lord your God. Chapter 9. Hear, O Israel, you are crossing over the Arden today to go into dispossess nations greater and mightier than you, great cities fortified to heaven, a people great and tall, the sons of the Anakim, whom you know and whom you have heard it said, who can stand before the sons of Anak? Know therefore today that it is the Lord your God who is crossing over before you as a consuming fire. He will destroy them and he will subdue them before you, so that you may drive them out and destroy them quickly, just as the Lord has spoken to you. Do not say in your heart when the Lord your God has driven them out before you, because of my righteousness the Lord has brought me in to possess this land. But it is because of the wickedness of the nations that the Lord is dispossessing them before you. It is not for your righteousness or for the uprightness of your heart that you are going in to possess their land, but it is because of the wickedness of the nations that the Lord your God is driving them out before you, in order to confirm the oath which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Yitzhak, and to Yaakov. Know then that it is not because of your righteousness that the Lord your God is giving you this good land to possess, for you are a stubborn people. Remember, do not forget how you provoked the Lord your God to wrath in the wilderness. From the day that you left the land of Mitzrayim until you arrived at this place, you have been rebellious against the Lord. Even at Horeb, you provoked the Lord to wrath, and the Lord was angry with you that he would have destroyed you. When I went up to the mountain to receive the tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant which the Lord had made with you, then I remained on the mountain 40 days and nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water. The Lord gave me the two tablets of stones written by the finger of God, and on them were all the words which the Lord had spoken with you at the mountain from the midst of the fire on the day of the assembly. It came about at the end of the 40 days and nights that the Lord gave me two tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant. Then the Lord said to me, arise, go down here quickly, for your people whom you brought out of Mitzrayim have acted corruptly. They have quickly turned aside from the way which I commanded them. They have made a molten image for themselves. The Lord spoke to me further, saying, I have seen this people, and indeed it is a stubborn people. Let me alone, that I may destroy them and blot out their name from under heaven. And I will make of you a nation mightier and greater than they. So I turned and came down the mountain, while the mountain was burning with fire, and the two tablets of the covenant were in my two hands. And I saw that you had indeed sinned against the Lord your God. You had made for yourselves a molten calf. You had turned aside quickly from the way which the Lord had commanded you. I took hold of the two tablets and threw them from my hands and smashed them before your eyes. I fell down before the Lord, as at the first, 40 days and 40 nights, and neither ate bread nor drank water because of all your sin which you had committed in doing what was evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. For I was afraid of the anger and hot displeasure with which the Lord was wrathful against you in order to destroy you. But the Lord listened to me that time also. The Lord was angry enough with Aharon to destroy him. So I also prayed for Aharon at that time. I took your sinful thing, the calf which you had made, and burned it with fire and crushed it, grinding it very small until it was fine as dust. I threw its dust into the brook that came down from the mountain. Again, at Terebah and at Massah and at Kibrotz Hatavah, you had provoked the Lord to wrath. When the Lord sent you from Kadesh Barnea, saying, go up and possess the land which I have given you, then you rebelled against the command of the Lord your God. You neither believed him nor listened to his voice. You have been rebellious against the Lord from the day I knew you. So I fell down before the Lord the 40 days and 40 nights, which I did because the Lord had said he would destroy you. I prayed to the Lord and said, O Lord God, do not destroy your people, even your inheritance, whom you have redeemed through your greatness, whom you have brought out of Mitzrayim with a mighty hand. Remember your servants, Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob, and do not look at the stubbornness of your people, at their wickedness or their sin. Otherwise, the land which you brought us from which you brought us might say, because the Lord was not able to bring them into the land which he had promised them, and because he hated them, he has brought them out to slay them in the wilderness. Yet they are your people, even your inheritance, whom you have brought out by your great power and your outstretched arm. Chapter 10. At that time the Lord said to me, cut out for yourself two tablets of stone like the former ones, and come up to me on the mountain, and make an ark of wood for yourself. I will write on the tablets the words that were on the former tablets which you had shattered, and you shall put them in the ark. So I made an ark of acacia wood, and cut out two tablets of stone like the former ones, and went up on the mountain with the two tablets in my hand. He wrote on the tablets, like the former writing, the Ten Commandments which the Lord had spoken to you on the mountain from the midst of the fire on the day of the assembly. And the Lord gave them to me. Then I turned and came down from the mountain and put the tablets in the ark which I had made. And there they are, as the Lord commanded me. Now the sons of Israel set out from Beerotz B'nei Yaakan to Moserah, where Aharon died. And there he was buried, and Eleazar his son ministered as priest in his place. From there they set out to Gudgudah, and from Gudgudah to Yotbatat, to the land of brooks of water. At that time the Lord set apart the tribe of Levi to carry the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, to stand before the Lord to serve him, and to bless his name until this day. Therefore, Levi does not have a portion or inheritance with his brothers. The Lord is his inheritance, just as the Lord your God spoke to him. I, moreover, stayed on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights, just like the first time. And the Lord listened to me that time also. The Lord was not willing to destroy you. Then the Lord said to me, arise, proceed out of your journey ahead of the people, that they may go in and possess the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Now, Israel, What does the Lord your God require from you but to serve, but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways and to love him, and to serve your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul, and to keep the commandment, keep the Lord's commandments and his statutes, which I am commanding you today for your own good? Behold, to the Lord your God, to the Lord your God belong heaven and the highest heavens, the earth and all that is in it. Yet on your fathers did the Lord set his affection to love them, and he chose their descendants after them, even you among all peoples, as it is to this day. So circumcise your hearts and stiffen your neck no longer. For the Lord your God is the God of gods and the Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, and the awesome God, who does not show partiality or take a bribe. He executes justice for the orphan and the widow, and shows his love for the alien by giving him food and clothing. So show your love for the alien. For you were aliens in the land of Mitzrayim. You shall fear the Lord your God. You shall serve him and cling to him, and you shall swear by his name. He is your praise, and he is your God, who has done these things, great and awesome things for you, which your eyes have seen. Your fathers went down to Mitzrayim, 70 persons in all, and now the Lord your God has made you as numerous as the stars of heaven. Chapter 11. You shall therefore love the Lord your God and always keep his charge, his statutes, his ordinances, and his commandments. Know this day that I am not speaking with your sons who have not known or who have not seen the discipline of the Lord your God, his greatness, his mighty hand, and his outstretched arm, and his signs and his works in which he did in the midst of Mitzrayim to Pharaoh and the king of Mitzrayim and to all his land, and what he did to the army of Mitzrayim, to its horses and its chariots, when he made the water of the Red Sea to engulf them while they were pursuing you, and the Lord completely destroyed them, and what he did to you in the wilderness until you came to this place, and what he did to Datan and Abiram and the sons of Eliab and the sons of Reuben, when the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them, their households, their tents, and everything that followed them, all among Israel. But your own eyes have seen all the great work that the Lord, which he did. You shall therefore keep every commandment which I am commanding you today, so that you may be strong and go in and possess the land into which you are about to cross to possess, so that you may prolong your days in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers to give them and to their descendants, a land flowing with milk and honey. For the land into which you are entering to possess it is not like the land of Mitzrayim from which you came, where you used to sow your seed and water it with your foot like a vegetable garden. But the land into which you are about to possess it, the land of hills and valleys, drinks water from the rain of heaven, a land for which the Lord your God cares. The eyes of the Lord your God are always on it, from the beginning even to the end of the year. It shall come about, if you listen obediently to my commandments, which I am commanding you today, to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, that he will give the rain for your land in its season, the early and the late rain, that you may gather in your grain and your new wine and your oil. He will give grass to your fields, in your fields for your cattle, and you will eat and be satisfied. Beware that your hearts are not deceived, and that you do not turn away and serve other gods and worship them, or the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you, and he will shut up the heavens so that there will be no rain, and the ground will not yield its fruit, and you will perish quickly from the good land which the Lord is giving you. You shall therefore impress these words of mine on your heart and on your soul, and you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall teach them to your sons, talking of them when you sit in your house and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you rise up. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates, so that your days and the days of your sons may be multiplied. on the land which the Lord swore to your fathers to give them, as long as the heavens remain above the earth. For if you are careful to keep all this commandment which I am commanding you to do, to love the Lord your God, to walk in His ways, and to hold fast to them, then the Lord will drive out all these nations from before you, and you will dispossess nations greater and mightier than you. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads shall be yours. Your border will be from the wilderness of Lebanon, and from the river Euphrates, even as far as the western sea. No man will be able to stand before you. The Lord your God will lay the dread of you and the fear of you on all the land on which you set your foot, as He has spoken to you. So that's the passage that we're looking over today. Any observations, questions, or such as before we get going too far on this? Okay. Well, as we started at the outset, we're talking about where we are in the timeline. One of the things we discussed in previously when we started out Devarim or Deuteronomy is that it definitely seems to be organized pretty methodically into these long addresses where Moshe starts talking and keeps going for long stretches of time. So you had the when we were looking at the first part, the first address is really like the big history lesson. Where we've come? Where did we come from? How did we get here? And this part here, which the second address, which starts from chapter 4 and goes through most of chapter 28 through that part, is really the second address. And in there is a big chunk of that going from chapter 6 all the way through chapter 26 is really an elaboration on the Ten Commandments, the Ten Statements. So when you are going through them and you are wondering how on earth all these seemingly disparate things fit together, start looking, well, perhaps they're put together thematically. And the section that we're looking at today kind of finishes out a continuing look at the first statement, really stretching from the beginning of chapter 6 through kind of the mid part of chapter 11. And started on that with the last parashah, and we're continuing on with it today from chapter 7 on through chapter 11, looking at different aspects of the first statement there. You know, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the house of slavery in Mitzrayim, and have no other gods before me, have no other gods in my face. So when you look at these various things we're looking at here, one thing to keep in mind and to look for is, well, how does this really fit with that statement? I'm the one who took you out, so look to me only, being where the Lord is really communicating this through Moshe. I'm the one who got you here. Why are you looking for anywhere else, anyone else, anything else for how you got here and where you're going? Yes, we have a question over here up the front.
It kind of reminds me of what parents will say to children, disobedient, rebellious children on occasion, and they'll say, I brought you into this world and I can take you out.
Well, yeah, that's a good way to sum it up. Okay, I'm done. Yeah, it really does sum up a lot of what's in here is, remember where your strength comes from, because you might have recognized a little segment in there where it says, you know, don't start thinking to yourself, you know, by my hand I got here, or I willed it and it happened. No, don't start thinking that, because that's hardly where the history of your forefathers came from. So don't start thinking that's your history too, and your future is that, wow, I'm so great. Well, look at how great I am. So I deserve this place. I deserve the land. Well, there's a whole chapter in there about, not so fast. So chapters 9 and 10 of the section we're looking at really hammer that question home of, well, are we here because we deserve it? So let's start out with the first part of where we started in chapter 7. You know, today we're just going to be hitting some highlights of this, because this is a key question, really. One of the reasons why it's the first statement of the Big Ten is that it sets the stage for all the stuff that's coming. And you know, might have heard other people talk about before kind of the parallel parallel lines between some of these statements and others in the Big Ten statements. And one of those parallel lines goes into, you know, love the Lord your God. You know, basically, God first, God only as your source of strength there. But also, honor your father and your mother. Because again, both things touch on where did you come from? Where are you going? One of the things that our modern culture, probably pretty much, you know, from the beginning of the 1900s forward, was a real movement. Actually, now that I think about it, probably is in the latter half of the 1800s, kind of starting over in Europe and centering along some of the universities in Germany, where the idea that we know better. The new way is better than the old ways. So the old ways coming along, maybe not so great, and just kind of re-look at a lot of this stuff and say, well, do we like it? If not, just toss it out. It's archaic. It doesn't belong anymore. So less of an emphasis on history, history becoming less of a guide for the future, and less of a way to analyze, hey, am I going in the right direction? You know, one of the things I've heard from a number of my colleagues and friends is, well, I've never made any mistakes. They were just learning experiences. But then, well, if you don't ever recognize that any of those things was not a good learning experience and never learned from any of those things, then where are you actually going? In circles. You're going in circles. You get ending up right back at the same problem that you encountered before and not realizing how you got there. And that is really what the book of Deuteronomy is all about. It's like, okay, you're headed into the land. How did you get here? And make sure that you don't end up in the same situation as the first generation in deciding to cast it all off. One of the great statements where we get the name for this, the Ekeb there, which kind of roughly translated into consequences, often it's translated because. So if you were to do a word search and, you know, look up because in a lot of modern translations, you'll notice that the word lurking behind it is usually Ekeb. You know, this is happening and it's a result of something else, a if-then sort of thing. Now, one of the things we'll be getting at is there are a lot of if-then things we said. If you do this, then this will happen. If you do this, then this will happen. But one thing should start kind of jogging your head a little bit is that, yeah, a lot of those bad things, those judgments, those corrections came down. But you also see relenting or repenting, but the turnaround in the restoration. One of those things that you'll notice is that in this restoration, we always talk about the restoration of Israel. We should probably talk about the restorations of Israel. There have been a number of them in big order, but when we talk about restoration, or put in another word of rebirth, second birth, it also follows along the same lines. One of the things you'll note in this is that key to restoration is justice. Things have to be right and things have to be wrong. Judgment. Okay, things are right, things are wrong. Then what? Judgment. Then mercy. If you don't have those things all together, you cannot have a restoration, because what are you going to restore them to? It's like, wait, you get somebody who's drowning, you get them out, and you push them back in again, they would try to climb out, and you just push them right back in again. No. You want them to stop getting into the place where they are in trouble. And that is a lot of what you see throughout this passage and talking about in the prophets. And if you've gone through the Haftarah before this point, you'll notice that it is the passage there in Isaiah really gets at this turning point, the turnaround, the change, the second birth at that point for Israel coming out of exile. So this passage where it starts out, you know, in verse 12 of chapter 7, then shall come about. We're in Deuteronomy. Sorry. Just mentioned it in passing. Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 12 is the starting passage. Then it shall come about because you listen to these judgments. So listen to the judgments, keep the judgments, and do them. So to listen to them, Shema, to Shamar, to keep them, and then to Asad, do them, actually put them into action. So you hear them, the words that are going into your head, into your brain, okay, you hear them, you're responding, then you guard them. That is something that you protect from. And as it we saw at the last part in chapter 11, as this was ending, it was kind of a reiteration of things that we saw back in chapter 6, you know, about putting those things of the frontlets on your forehead, and also about putting them on your doorposts, teaching to your children. These are things that we heard back in chapter 6, all about guarding it from one generation to the next. But in something that you guard, you have to realize that it's worthy of guarding. And that is really a lot of what Israel's history is about, is do we think that the things that other generations have passed to us, that the prophets have passed to us, that Moshe has passed to us, that Messiah has passed to us, are these things worthy of guarding? Do we want to shamar them? Do we want to guard them, to protect them, to pass them on? Because if you don't really think that something is worth guarding, worth protecting, your effort in actually passing it on is not going to be that diligent. And as you go through the writings from Joshua on, Judges, and onto the historical books, and then finally end up in the prophets, yeah, you see what happens when you don't really think the knowledge of the Lord is something worthy, or actually worthy of holding on to the point where you get down to the later part of Israel's history, and they can't even find these words anymore. They have to find it in the back, some heap in the back of the temple. Yeah, so it's like when you have a restoration, rediscover what it was that was so great. Or as one of the things that Messiah was saying to one of the assemblies there in Revelation, you've lost your first love. Regain it. What was it that got you so excited to begin with? What got you so charged up to begin with? Remember that. Go back to it. Recapture it. Where did that come from? Did you just make it up? Oh, did you read it? Well, where are those words? Are those things, well, those words worthy of passing on to your friends, to your coworkers, to your children? Is that something that's anybody else would like to hear? Or is that just something you want to just keep on your shelf, gathering dust or in some back room somewhere? Another highlight to really catch on, and this is something we'll focus on a bit because it shows up quite a lot in not only the prophets, but also and specifically referred to in the apostolic writings, is in Deuteronomy chapter 8. Kind of the passage there in verses 2 through 6. So, kind of encapsulating the why, how do we get here, why are we here? And in verse 2, they're talking about that the Lord your God has led you into the wilderness these 40 years that he might humble you. So, one of the reasons that they were in the wilderness was to humble the people. And all about humility is to remember where honor is due. To remember that, hey, you're not number one. Somebody else deserves honor. Something else deserves respect. And that was part of what the 40 years was about. Then it goes on. To test you to know what is in your heart, whether you would keep these commandments or not. And we get into a couple of the little vignettes. He just kind of drops these names of places in there. And pretty significant things happen in those places that he just mentions in passing. But in those cases, that was about the, are we there yet? Is this thing ever going to end? Is it going to end? Well, that was 40 years. Think of the exile. There in Babylon, 70 years. Now, when we think about the time that we're awaiting for the kingdom of heaven to come with power to, that's, you know, going on 2,000 years. Talk about waiting, 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 waiting. So the question that this generation has to ask is that, are we guarding? Are we protecting? Are we passing on the things that have come to us? Are we seeing these things as something hugely significant? Because one of the benefits that we have of overlapping generations in a family is that you can learn what happened in previous time periods. Because later on, after generation passes and goes on, you can look it up in a book and see someone's name. Oh, okay, that was my great-grandfather or such. Do you know anything about him? What he did? Anything significant about them? Unless there was a passing on from one generation to the next, gone. It's all gone. So we, as people who have inherited this, and as you see the mention there in the writings about that we, upon all of the generations, have come to a pinnacle. This, all this stuff is for us. All coming together. Yes, it's been hugely important for all past generations, but this is something that's reaching a time for us. So, quite significantly, when you think about that, is that at a time period where the respect for authority, the respect for the wisdom of previous generations, the respect for history, the respect for ideas of the past and evaluating them, hey, yeah, that was actually something good to guard and to do in the next generation, that this is coming all to us to rediscover that, yeah, this is one coherent message all the way from generation to revelation, all a coherent guide message of something that God is doing, a journey. So just like the small little journey that we're looking at here of just going from Mitzrayim into the land, quote, small journey, unquote, because a lot of the Bible really touches on that, quote, small journey, that our journey really through the whole world from Eden all the way through the kingdom of God, that is a journey as well, a journey from wandering, you could say, and then coming back to the end. And one of the things that also mentions in the passage there at the beginning of Deuteronomy chapter 8, to make you understand that man does not live by bread alone. So one of those aspects of this wandering was to humble you, to, okay, realize, hey, I've got something to learn. Hey, something else might be a better idea than the direction we're going. But then to realize that you do not live by bread alone. Anyway, focuses on that quite a bit more as the chapter 8 stretches on into chapter 9 and chapter 10. But what was the gripe and complaint? And a couple of those incidents are mentioned there in chapter 10, chapter 9. But the griping and complaining was all about, oh, hey, the stuff down in Mitzrayim, hey, that was great. Oh, we had wonderful big piles of food and it was so wonderful. We just got to go back. And what do we got? We got this stuff, it just comes every day, and oh, it's just terrible. What is it? You know, really? Do we have to eat this? Is this all that there is? And that being, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. That being the huge lesson, not just for that generation, but for every generation there has ever been. Talk about Abraham. When he believed God, he trusted what God said. Those words that came from God, he trusted what he said and said, okay, I'm going to go that path. I don't understand this. This doesn't make any sense. This seems totally crazy. He's going to promise me this great legacy through me. Then he wants me to do in my child. What? That's crazy. Where is he going with this? So we, in a case, as children of God sit in the back of the heavenly station wagon going along, wondering, when is this ever going to end? Where are we going? Oh, come on. Can't we just stop? Well, that looks like fun. Let's just stop here and hang out for a few decades. Ah, that looks like a nice place. And it continues on there in chapter 8 of Deuteronomy. Your clothing did not wear out on you. Your foot did not swell these 40 years. Thus you are to know in your heart that the Lord your God was disciplining you as a man disciplines his son. So, do we see all of the things that happened with the exiles, the wanderings, whatnot, as being training for something greater? Or is it just, you know, one more lump on your head that you just have to endure, and hopefully the other lump doesn't come too quickly after that? Is it something that you're being prepared for, or just held back? So, I mean, those are kind of ways that we can look at the training of the previous generation, the training of our fathers and mothers and such. We can see that as something holding us back, keeping us from what we want to do. Or it can be like positioning us to do something great, do something fantastic. So that's the perspective you need to look at. And our kind of our Haftarah that really works into this is really in John chapter 6. And it touches on the passages at the beginning, verses of Matthew 4 and Luke 4, where it's talking about the temptation of Yeshua after his baptism, the mikvah there by Yohanan, John the baptizer there in the Yarden. And it says the Spirit took him off into the wilderness, and he was out there for 40 days. And it says that he became hungry. Quite a very interesting position that you got this. He became hungry. And here we're looking at this with... why do we live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God and not just looking for bread? It's that more than just what we want to do, it's what should we do. And that should we do, is that based on anything? Or is it just our hunch, what we think might be a good way to go? Or is it something that is passed down as, hey, this has been a good way to go for decades, centuries, eons, thousands of years, that this has been a good way to go. Do we want to listen to it? Do we want to trust it? Or do we just want to just trudge on until we hit our head one more time on one of those low-hanging branches that, you know, we'd been warned about but took no heed of? Just trudge on. And one of those great things that we see with the temptation of Messiah is one of the things that the adversary put to him is like, hey, if you are the Son of God, hey, turn these stones into bread. You can feed yourself. Go ahead. Go feed yourself. And one of the things he quotes back is the passage we just read there in Deuteronomy chapter 8, that man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. So one of the great things that the Messiah has pointed to us, we could say, well, okay, he was learning to trust in God. But something even more fundamental than that is that trusting in your own power, that was really a great example that he was putting to us. Is, okay, yeah, Son of God, you could call on the power of God and make the transformation. Yet, he chose not to and said, this is the path that I've been sent down. I'm going to follow this path until I'm told otherwise, that this is the path I need to go. So we in ourselves, when we're down a stretch in a path, do we just decide at some point, okay, now this has been long enough. I'm just going to go off and do my own thing. Going to take a different route. This route, too hard. I can take a shortcut. Or do we press on forward? This is in John chapter 6. We kind of have a truncated session here today, so we won't be able to read all of John chapter 6. But in light of all the things that we just read here in the Deuteronomy, I recommend you go back with that fresh in your head and go back and read John chapter 6. When it's talking about the bread of life. And you know, it goes into that very strange, the strange discussion near the end of John chapter 6 about, you know, eat my flesh and drink my blood. And people, are you crazy? What are you talking about? But one of the interesting things, I don't know if you caught it or not, we've seen in the passage we were looking about the nations before you, that God is going to consume them. The word is ahal, meaning to eat. To eat. God is going to eat up all of the forces in front of you. It says consume, and we think, okay, just kind of metaphorically thing in there. Well, it is an interesting connection between relying, you're always being guided by your stomach, metaphorically, maybe even literally, or are you following the direction of where you need to go? We got Yom Kippur coming up here, and one of those things that's talked about is you're to humble yourselves and to focus on what it is that the Lord is doing on Yom Kippur. Kind of a little, tiny little one-day vignette into something that's been happening for a long period of time and a great work that our great high priest has been doing. And entirely coincidentally, it is a focus that begins in the letter to the Hebrews in chapter 4. And chapter 4 ends with talking about we have such a great high priest. And chapters 3 and chapters 4 really focus on a big incident that just happens to be mentioned right here in this Torah passage there, talking about Masa. You might have mentioned seen it in passing about Masa. And he mentions these kind of three places, four places, five places. There were these major rebellions in Israel's history. One of those was in Masa. We'll be getting to that in just a second, but just to note here that one of the things that to really look at is what is being communicated in John chapter 6. What is John chapter 1 talking about? How does it start? The Word became flesh. The Memre, being the word is in Hebrew, but also the wisdom of God, but also in Greek there, the Logos, the Word of God becoming flesh and dwelling among us. That being the great picture where this starts out. Then we get up into chapter 6, where we have this bread of life and talking about bread. And, you know, to the point where it says in chapter 6, of John, your ancestors ate bread in the desert and died. That's quite sobering when you think of it, is that these blessings that come upon us and come our way, is that really our whole connection to God? That, oh, these blessings come our way, thus I'm living great with God. But one of the great points of that is that this bread that comes, oh yeah, it may keep you alive and it's a great blessing that God provides, but are you taking it any further? Are you, quote, eating it in? Are these words that are coming from God, are you actually consuming them as if you did not, you would die? Are you taking them in to a regular basis as if it was your actual life depending on it? Because that's kind of what the illustration here is with this being the bread of life. Give us this day our daily bread. Yeah, in the blessings that we have of the things that come our way to keep us alive, but also the things that really keep us alive. If you've ever read any of the accounts of people that have undergone horrific either torture, imprisonment and torture and such, one of the things that you'll see as a thread that goes through all of them, no matter what century you're looking at that these people have been in, is that no matter what these people did to the body, if that person was actually feasting on what it was, the words of the bread that they had eaten earlier in their lives, that was carrying them through. Even though the captors wrecked their bodies, they could not wreck their spirit, because spirit was feasting on that reservoir of the bread of God that they had been consumed earlier in life. That's one of those things that, you know, you think of is that one of the things that Messiah prayed for, and later on in John, or around chapter 15 or so, where he's mentioning that don't worry about what you're going to say when you're brought before councils and such. I'm going to give you those words, pulling out of the storehouse things old and things new. And that storehouse that God has given us every time we go into his word, think of that as this giant storehouse of things that we can call on in a later period. This is going back to Deuteronomy chapter 8 for a moment, another great passage that is kind of a getting back to the whole food and where the blessings come from. Deuteronomy 8 verse 10, when it says, "When you have eaten and are satisfied, you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you." One of the things that we talk about and have as a regular part of our celebration for Rosh Chodesh, or the new moon, is to have a prayer after we eat together and say, we are not going to forget. After we've eaten all the good food and all the blessings, we pray for blessings every month. But after we've eaten them all and had all these blessings come down on us on a regular basis, do we forget where they come from? Do we regularly remember where these come from? And then the same thing about when we enter the rest, and that picture of the promised land being God's rest. You see that developed in Psalm 95 and also in Hebrews chapters 3 and 4, this picture that we enter God's rest. It's like a place where you feel at home, where you want to put down roots. You want to stay there. You're not always trying to go off and find the new thing. You realize that you're actually home. You're not feeling like you want to wander anymore. The thing to touch on as we go through here and looking at more of the history is in Deuteronomy 9 and 10. And in there, this talk about some of the, you could say, the great failings of history. Yes, before we move on.
I just wanted to say that the rich heritage that we come from being Hebrew, you know, because it was passed down orally from generation to generation, that's what the enemy is trying to destroy, is that it's a government and it's a rich history, and it's not just words, it's a way of living, and so it's something you see, it's an action. So the way the person conducts themselves and the way they behave, you know that they're written on their heart, because it just comes out of them naturally, you know. And so that's why Hasatan, you know, tries to destroy the family, is, and because of, you know, who wants to wipe an entire nation off the world? What they have is love. And, you know, that's the tragedy of all this is that, you know, I know Moses is out there telling them this. He's reminding them. And I'm grateful that they did what they went through is for us for such a time as this. At these end times, that we can look at these, to go back and look at these things all orchestrated in a book, in a Bible, all together. So we are going to be held to a higher standard. We're going to be the last Hebrew hot dogs. So I always tell my friend that we're held to a higher standard having all this knowledge. And it's important for us to remember and to talk about it. And I just feel it's a big responsibility. And so I just wanted to.
Yeah, that's a huge responsibility, and great, because it gets into what we're going to be talking about, especially in chapter 10. Is starting off in chapter 9, one of the things that we see mentioned here quite quickly, mentioned verse 5, and also in verse 6, and then also in, I think it's verse 7 as well. Yeah, so like three times there before getting into a lot of the details of why this is so, but not to get so obsessed and attached to your righteousness, that this is something that God owes you. Oh, we were so great. God has picked us. We are that which is chosen. So thus God owes us. And what Once chosen, always chosen, as we might say, is a variation on that theme. But one of the things that's mentioned here in chapter 9 is that, yeah, don't get so caught up in your own chosenness, because God is actually doing something, perhaps in spite of you. That's kind of a sad thing to actually think about, because when you think about the instruments that God has used throughout time, sometimes used in spite of the person themselves. I mentioned here Pharaoh of Egypt. That was something that God used in spite of the Pharaoh of Egypt. Yes, we have a question down here.
I mean, it's just such a statement of grace right there. You know, you talk about grace in the Old Testament. I mean, if that's not grace to still love these stubborn people, unworthy, making calves, you know, out of molten iron or whatever it was, gold, whatever.
Gold, yes.
But the point is, you know, I mean, if that's not grace in the Old Testament, I don't know what grace is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's, you know, some pretty amazing, you know, kicks in the teeth that the people of God have given God over time. And just, I think we've kind of detailed, what, about 10 of them specifically between Mitzrayim and the land? That's, you know, 10 statements, 10 kicks in the teeth. Yes?
I have to say that I don't just relate it to the Old Testament, but I feel like I'm one of them too in the wilderness, because just as easily as we're putting off bad behavior and you're going through your role and you're putting off more and more because the Lord puts more and more in your heart to clean out, then I'll, without even realizing, start reverting back to another one that I put off, and then I catch myself. So, I mean, I feel like this is still going on, the wilderness, if that makes any sense.
That's why it says that these things are written for our admonition. So
and
this is part of our family history that we are told to guard and to pass on.
And that's where I think his grace comes in, is because we as sinful flesh can't fulfill this. But by his grace and his shed blood, that we have this redeeming. But we also have to be checking ourselves. And then when we do put off stuff, you know, catch yourself when the old stuff's coming back, you know. The Holy Spirit's real good at that. It's like, didn't we just put that off like 3 weeks ago? And I'm like, oh, you're right, you know.
Yeah, that's why you have a number of these teaching tools that come through there. The teaching tools about, you know, putting them on the doorposts of your home. I'm not talking about decor here. We're talking about a reminder. Yeah, a lot of people like to put sticky notes all over everything to remind them about this or that, or have their phone going off every 10 seconds for a reminder about doing this or that or the other. Well, these are some things that God passed along as like, hey, these are like reminders on your phone. Whenever you see them, you know, whether they be the tzitzit, whether they be the mezuzah, whatever it is that you see, you come across, it should be a reminder. The korbanot, we've talked about that when we went through Leviticus. These things are supposed to be reminders of what is actually happening, what your condition is, who you used to be, where you used to be. And, you know, literally talking about Mitzrayim, but also where you used to be as a person and where God has taken you. So these are things are always reminders as we move through life. At least they should be. And one of the things you see that happens pretty quickly in Israel's history, and again and again and again throughout it, both throughout the Tanakh and also the apostolic writings, is that this happens again and again, this forgetting of who you are and where you come from. One of the things that's recounted there is, we talked about the golden calf incident that's kind of recounted in Deuteronomy 8 through 21. But they're starting in Deuteronomy 9:22 mentions these three incidents: the rebellions there of Taberah, of Massa, and Kibroth Hattaavah. Just quickly, the Taberah is an incident that's recorded there in Numbers chapter 11, the first three verses, and that was One of the frequent complaints about, oh, we don't have enough water. No, don't have enough water. Complain, complain, complain. And complaining about adversity. So this fire then come up around the outside of the camp and says it consumed, it burned the people, some of the people on the outside of the camp. And realize, okay, once Moshe interceded, then the fire stopped. And again, it mentions there Massa, which is an account there recorded in Exodus 17, in the first seven verses there of Exodus 17. That was a complaint about having not enough water. Because you might remember the time frame of that. Exodus 17 comes right after Exodus 16, which is all about daily bread, the manna. So right after you have the starting up of God providing food every day, then you have a complaint, oh, we don't have any water. Oh, is God with us or not? Yeah. Besides the stuff that's coming every morning, is God with us or not? And grumbling, 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 complaining. And that's that question that you see there at Massa, is God with us or not? You see it referred to a number of times, we mentioned it in Psalm 95 and Hebrews 3 and 4, that being a key reason, among all the other reasons, being a key reason why God said in his wrath, you will not enter my rest, meaning you will not enter the land. That question there, is God with us or not? After all the things, after crossing the sea, after getting the daily bread, after getting water, we keep asking, is God with us or not? So a reminder that seeing all the things that God provides us all the time, to just take stock in it. Because even out in the secular world, they're always talking about be mindful, be grateful. Start out your day being grateful all the time. The secular world gets this. So we being, you know, sons and daughters of the King of the universe, the creator of all things, we even more so should be so grateful and be able to see on a regular basis all the things that God does for us and to be grateful of those things as well. And then in Kibrot Hatava, which translates into graves of greediness. That's a good description of that, because what a complaint again about manna. Oh, this stuff, they're talking about, oh, when we were back there, we used to eat all this great stuff. There again, and this is like in Numbers, the last, starting from verse 4, Numbers 11, going through the end of the chapter. And complaining about this, and give us meat, because we used to eat all this great stuff, but especially we had meat. And the key things that they mention there is, now our appetite is gone. There is nothing at all to look at except this manna. Nothing at all to look at except this stuff that comes every day right outside of our tents. We just have to go out and collect it. And we even get double amount on the sixth day of the week that tied us through on the seventh day. But the interesting part of that is kind of in the Hebrew of our appetite, our nefesh, our appetite was ivash, or dry. Our soul was dry. So thus, we wanted meat. Give us meat to eat. Well, yeah. So you had the daily bread coming every morning. Then God miraculously sends them quail. Not just a little bit of quail, but a huge amount of quail, as it's recorded there. Huge amount of quail. So another miracle happens, and in the midst of it, those who rushed out and grabbed it and started chomping on it, says, well, the meat was still in their teeth, then the plague came. So one of those things we talk about, a rebellion, always be ungrateful for the things that you got. And to not be looking. Well, the amazing thing is that they noticed that the manna was there. Well, there was nothing to look at except this manna. So they knew it was coming, because otherwise they'd be hungry. But we want something better. We don't like this. It's not as fun. It doesn't taste as good. Deuteronomy 9, verses 23, 29, it recounts there the rejection of Kadesh Barnea. So there at Massah and Meribah there in Exodus 17 is recorded the account. It's kind of like the front end of the bookend of the rebellion and kind of the back end of the really, all right, we've had it with this generation. That's the Kadesh Barnea, where after the spies went in, looked at the land. Then when the accounts of the spies came back, you know, 10 of them said, "Ooh boy, there's lots of good stuff in there, but we're just not powerful enough to take it." And the two that said, "Yeah, those people were big, but God is bigger. He said, go in, take it, let's go. Let's go up." That being a really good lesson in, yeah, okay, our problems can seem absolutely insurmountable, but the problem solver who we have is even bigger than our problems. Our problems are never as big as what God can do with our problems. Because, you know, when you got the kind of eternal perspective on where the world is going, where it's eventually going to be, even the problems that may be the end of us, that's not the end of us. That's one of the great things about having the creator of all things being the one who's guiding us. It's the one who creates, recreates, refreshes the promise there of resurrection and the new kingdom, things made new. And in Deuteronomy 10, the first 11 verses there is another kind of account of going into more detail about the golden calf and going up and getting the stone tablet. So this is hitting the rewind button quite a long way back to really the, you know, time period just after the golden calf of going up and getting the second set of the tablets again. But this also really shows us again that even after such an unbelievable slap in the face of saying, making a golden image and saying, this is the one who brought us out of Egypt. Unbelievable slap in the face. Yet God says, okay, Moshe, I'm listening to you. But when you talk about that, we're at the outset of the redemption, the transformation, the rebirth is involving justice. Okay, yeah, they really screwed up. Judgment. Okay, yeah, you're going to be grinding this thing up and you're going to have to drink it. And there's going to be judgment coming down on it. But also then the mercy on the whole people. And God says, okay, we'll go back up and rewrite this. I'm going to write it again. I'm going to hit the reset button yet again and start this thing out yet again. Closing out our discussion today, just to see a passage in Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 16, where it says, "So circumcise your heart and stiffen your neck no longer." And it goes on to a description of what it means to circumcise your heart. And one of those things that it mentions there about the orphans, the widows, and the stranger, the sojourner, the people who can be looked down on in society would be a good way to describe those three classes of people. And one of those descriptions, and what does it mean to circumcise your heart? To cut off the things that would make you look down and not treat these people with utmost respect and utmost deference and utmost care. Cut off those things of yourself that would keep you from not just being the outpouring of your heart, just want to go and help these types of people, anyone in need, people who are humbled, who don't see themselves as being great in society or in your community or in your family, the ones who you would think would not be seen as great receivers of respect, show them respect. Follow the leader, because it says there, God looks after the widows, he looks after the orphans, he looks after the sojourners, the the visitors, the travelers, the foreigners in your midst. So, thus, you do so as well. And a couple of passages that really focus on the aspect of the circumcised heart, or just a couple of passages related to this in Leviticus 26, verses 40 through 42. If they confess their iniquity and the iniquity of their forefathers and their unfaithfulness which they committed against me, and also in their acting with hostility against me, I also was acting with hostility to them to bring them to the land of their enemies. Or if their uncircumcised heart becomes humbled, that they make amends for their iniquity, then I will remember my covenant with Yaakov, and I will also remember my covenant with Yitzhak, and my covenant with Abraham as well, and I will remember the land. So that being a great promise up there, what does that mean to circumcise your heart? To humble yourself. I guess a good way is to be with the, to cut off those things in your heart that are keeping you from turning around, to heading in a different way, to heading in God's way. And another passage that really touches on this is actually comes from the Haftarah. The Haftarah, traditional Haftarah passage for Ekeb is Isaiah 49 verses 14 through chapter 51 verse 3. And it's a really a prophecy of the restoration of Israel. So what we read here in our parasha is about, okay, the warning that these things are going to happen. So here with Isaiah, we're seeing, this is the time where you're going to need to really restore things because they've gone off the cliff already. So this time of restoration is going to be coming. What is it that you're going to need to do? Don't have a time to get through all of it, but the first couple of verses in this passage really encapsulate this. When you talk about the turnaround and the mercy of God. But Sion said, "The Lord has forsaken me, and God has forgotten me. Can a woman forget her nursing child and have no compassion on the son of her womb? Even these may forget, but I will not forget you." So, even though the judgment of the Lord was pretty harsh with the conquest of land by first Assyria and then Babylon, and the scattering of people all over the place, even though that was harsh and it looked like God was just totally done, had totally divorced the people, yet he gave all these messages, these foreshadowings that there was going to be the turnaround, the restoration, the mercy was going to be coming. Yeah, judgment came, but then comes the mercy. And another passage, it's kind of the companion New Covenant passage that fits with the one in Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 31 through 34. This one is in Ezekiel chapter 36. We'll be looking at verses 22 through 27 because nicely, this not only encompasses the what we had seen in chapter 9 about don't think of yourself as being so fantastic, but then we also see the mercy of God is like, okay, I'm going to do something fantastic because of the promise that I made long, long, long ago. Not because of how great you are, because of how great the Lord is. And as we talked about with circumcising the heart, he's just going to show you how this turnaround is going to happen, how this restoration, how the mercy is going to work, what this mercy is going to involve. So we're in Ezekiel 36, starting in verse 22, and we'll be going through 27. "Therefore say to the house of Israel, thus says the Lord God, it is not for your sake, O house of Israel, that I am about to act, but for my holy name, which you have profaned among the nations where you went. I will vindicate the holiness of my great name, which has been profaned, made common, worthless among the nations. which you have profaned in their midst. Then the nations will know that I am the Lord, declares the Lord God. When I prove myself holy among you in their sight, for I will take you from the nations, gather you from all the lands, and bring you into your own land. Then I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your filthiness and from all your idols. Moreover, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit within you, and I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you will be careful to observe my ordinances. So when we talk about the legacy that we want to guard, what we want to pass on and go between generations, that this is, we talk about the good news. This is the good news. This is the gospel. This is the Besora. This is the good news that's coming down through thousands and thousands of years. That this is what God is doing. That He is staking out this, you could say, beachhead in the world. In a world that has rejected Him. Even taken to Himself a people that often rejects Him, often, you know, denies Him, betrays Him. Yet, He continues on and says, I want to make this people big. So big that this people then takes over and becomes the great leader of the nations. That all the nations want to find out, wow, who is leading you? Who is behind all this? Moving from a profane thing among the nations that everybody just scoffs when they hear the name of the Lord, to everyone wanting to know who the Lord is. What does the Lord say? What does He say? Wow, that's fantastic. That's the legacy that we move on from generation to generation. And that's the great thing that Yeshua came to show us. That this is what God is all about. Yes, there is the hammer, and the hammer has to come down because of the rebellion that happens in the world. But the hammer is not all there is. And if you stretch this metaphor kind of precariously, the hammer is a part of the fashioning process. That sometimes you just have to be hammered into something better, into something more nice. And that's kind of a hard thing to take, that we need to be fashioned into something different. But one of the things that they mentioned in the prophets and in the writings is like, well, you know, can the pottery really say to the potter, why'd you make me like this? Each of us are made in a certain way with certain talents, certain gifts, certain blessings, and whatever. Now, can we take God's fashioning? Can we take God's correction, the discipline, not as something that that you see in a number of different worldviews out there, that the deities get bored and so they just start throwing thunderbolts to amuse themselves? But this is correction that's coming, discipline that's coming to refine and to make better. To make better not just for ourselves, but for the blessing that we and the generations that follow can have on the world. And that's the great good news that we have for the world, that this is not all that there is, and that the kingdom of heaven is certainly the place everybody wants to be. So in that great fulfillment of the prayer of Shlomo Solomon, that this house of prayer for all nations is a place that all nations want to be. So we see the great fulfillment there in Zechariah 14, that all nations are going to come up to the house of the Lord there. That is a place where everybody wants to be. So that's our prayer for today, is that God, when He refashions us, continues to take that new heart, that new spirit that He's given within us, and to make that grow bigger, where we become hungry, hungry for the words of the Lord and the direction where the Lord wants to take us, and not hungry for the things from our former lives, the things that everybody gets hungry for, yet never satisfied with. Any last thoughts as we close out? All right, well, let's close in prayer. Father God, we thank you for giving us your words and for giving us your Spirit to help us understand. We thank you for giving us your Son Yeshua to cover over our sins, transgressions, and iniquities. We thank you for that mercy you've given us. In his name, amen.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hillel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hillel.info. That's H-A-L-L-E-L.info. Hillel.info.